And welcome to everybody here on YouTube as we begin another exciting edition of Off the Hook Overtime. Kyle, you seem to have made it.
Present.
Okay, and Rob, Gila, Alex, you're all in overtime land in Skypeville?
That's
present,
right.
And accounted for.
Okay.
We are here.
Awesome.
And we are live.
Well, that's all we ask for. That's all we ask for.
And we've gotten our first Make It Louder comment.
We haven't even started talking yet. How can people be demanding that we change the levels already? We're as loud as we're going to get, I think.
Yeah, I'll adjust it just a little bit, but last week was really good, and the only reason it's set the way it is because we accept phone calls, and we have, I don't know, only so much power, technically, and it works the way it works, so I don't know. I'll do a little bit, but
yeah,
hopefully...
I think we're sounding good.
All right. Well, what you think, right, Rob, is what we're going to go by.
I'm going to go with what Rob said, then.
If Rob thinks we sound good, that's the barometer.
See, when I mess with it, that's when it goes all crazy.
I know,
so
right?
I'm going to not mess with it.
Yeah.
But it's mostly for the benefit so that the caller can hear, so that people that are joining us remotely can hear, and myself, we can all hear one another and talk, and That's why it is the way it is. But please tell us if it's too loud or too...
Or, you know, let's talk about something other than our audio levels.
Yeah.
All we ever do.
Yeah.
It gets a bit tired. Yes, Alex?
On the subject of the utility of NFTs...
How does he sound? Is he too loud? He's good, right?
Oh, see, no, you're doing
I'm just
it.
Making sure everybody's, you know, even here.
I heard okay. it.
No, you sounded clear to me. Good and clear.
Yeah.
All right. I'm sorry, Alex.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
So, as I said again, on the subject of the utility of NFTs, one of the things I'd like to share is that we have an active case right now in the federal district court in Alaska, believe it or not.
I think I passed by that. Is that in Fairbanks? No, wait, Juneau.
I think our case is in Alaska.
No, I so know. Alaska is a big state, but I'm naming cities.
Anchorage is what I meant to say.
Okay.
Yeah, ours, I believe, is in Anchorage. I haven't been there. I would love to go there to make an appearance, but we made a this is a case involving a sort of weird, hostile takeover of a blockchain investigation company. And, you know, the facts of this case are really quite interesting, but some of the defendants are located overseas in places like Cyprus that are very difficult, and it's very difficult to serve people in those jurisdictions with a summons and complaint from a federal district court in the United States. You have to go through the Hague Convention. It takes a long time. So we made a motion for court-ordered substituted service in that case that would allow us to do various other things than go through the Hague Convention for service of process, like publish the fact that there's a lawsuit against these people in certain magazines or, contact their former lawyers. But one of the things we did, given the nature of the case involving blockchain investigators, was that we had the wallet addresses of a couple of these guys. So we asked the judge to authorize us to serve them by airdropping an NFT into their wallets.
Oh, wow.
And we did.
airdropping an NFT into their crypto wallet.
That's great.
That's right. And there's metadata associated with the NFT that says you have been, you know, you are basically a defendant in this lawsuit, and you can view the complaint at this web address.
A crypto subpoena.
Crypto NFT. Yeah, crypto subpoena through an NFT.
Yeah.
So there's just like another use case for an NFT.
Okay, well, we'll see if anybody takes that seriously and shows up to crypto court or whatever. go ahead, Gila.
We actually did have a listener question. Before I pass on this listener question, did want to remind everybody that part of the reason that the chat exists is so you can communicate with us, and we do not monitor the chat before overtime starts.
It's like it doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist, right. So just as a reminder. Now, a listener asks, and I quote, why aren't y'all more skeptical about crypto?
Wait, how do we not express skepticism over the last 20 minutes? I've heard nothing but skepticism, saying it's not real, it's crazy, it's chaos. I mean, what words do you want us to use? It's, look, we can't deny it exists. It's out there, and there are large sums of money floating around that are either lost or can be guided into something constructive or can be used for criminal purposes. But yeah, like it or hate it, it's real. It's there.
Yeah, I'm firmly on the record as the more I learned about cryptocurrency over the past 15 years or so, the less I liked it. And I reached a point where I decided to have nothing to do with it. I don't own any, don't buy any, don't fiddle with any, and don't plan to. And that's my take on it.
But,
and
you know, if people can use it for good things, like the listener who offered to donate 10 tickets to Hope for people who can't afford to go, we're better off having that than not having that. And if we can find other constructive uses for people who, you know, have decided they don't need it themselves, then I think we should encourage that rather than simply pretend it doesn't exist, right?
Yes. So while we have all expressed personal skepticism, and I'm also willing to say that in my professional life, someone said, hey, why don't we accept crypto for donations at this organization? And I said, oh, boy, did you ask the wrong person, and proceeded to explain for like 15 minutes why it was a bad idea. And they said, oh. But we did have another listener follow up and say the fact that you can buy tickets with Bitcoin is seen as a lack of skepticism.
Well, I mean,
and I think that's the question.
The thing is, you can buy things using all kinds of currencies right now, stable ones, unstable ones. We just like to be open to whatever works for whomever. And it's not an endorsement. It's just opening up the gates for if this is easier for somebody, they have that option. And we're not going to indoctrinate you with our opinions as to what you should do or what you shouldn't do or what words you should use or shouldn't use. It's just, it is. It's there.
Oh, I want to basically clarify. I think basically exactly the circumstance Gila referred to was how we began to accept it in the first place. It was at the behest of the hacker community, people that read the magazine that come to Hope. We weren't really that aware of it early on. And I guess the skepticism, yeah, we're entirely skeptical of it. It's really something that, like I was trying to advise on the show, that should be handled seriously because it's not an investment vehicle. Like, you really need to be clear-eyed about how and what you're doing. And there's been a lot, there's been changes with it. You have to, like Alex talks about a lot, like, you kind of have to follow the state of the art, what people are doing with it, what the trends are. This goes to how it's being used in things like malware. So all of that are like the backdrop against which we accept it for things like the conference. And it was new to us, still is in what we're saying here. And basically early on was something we wanted to experiment with because it involved technology.
Right.
There were friends of ours in the CryptoPunk and CypherPunk scene that hate it. It bothers them that, and I think for the exact reasons that I critique, that, you know, people treated it as an investment vehicle, as something that is like hedge funds and that kind of stuff. So, like, then that itself has its own reputation in the financial sector, and in some ways began to be bleed into cryptocurrency, like perhaps experts or feigned experts in that area kind of trying to work it into as a way to like hedge against people that they already compete with in finance and stuff. So yeah, there were like forces pushing and pulling this thing that did not have a sort of central body directing it. It was directed by the people using it. And so the instance of people saying, hey, why don't you accept crypto? That's actually how people get started in using it. It isn't necessarily because they have some you know, undying faith in it, or it was presented, or they're, you know, all in on it in some way. We wanted to experiment with it, and that's how we got into it.
But let's be clear. Do not invest your life savings in crypto. It's not something that I would ever rely upon, and it could all disappear tomorrow. Those are facts. So be careful out there, and don't invest more than you can afford to see at zero tomorrow. Okay, Alex, go ahead.
Yeah. Building on what you said, Kyle, in terms of the evolution of this, and also going back to our friend Virgil. No, and I'll tell you, I think he is such an incredibly talented and smart guy too. And when I was taking this position with the Ethereum name service, one of the things Virgil did, because he was intimately involved, I think, with the creation of that, of the protocol itself, of the ENS protocol. And so, yeah, he gave me a reading list of things that I should read ahead of time, right? That so you understand the foundation, the mindset, the mentality of various people, players, and things like that, which I thought was really cool. So that he in a sense became my tutor, and I was reading Vitalik Buterin's book Proof of Stake, which Virgil had recommended certain chapters that I read, not the entirety of it, but I wound up just going through and reading the entirety of it because it was fascinating. It's mostly a compilation of his blog posts about Ethereum before it started and the idea behind it and putting together this platform and whatnot. But one of the things that Vitalik had said a couple of years ago in this book I thought was super interesting, because he was saying, look, we to evolve this notion of Ethereum and the blockchain and the usage of it, we don't need more computer scientists and we don't need more finance people joining the fray here. What we need are actually more philosophers. We need more people who understand the social implications of technology and can forecast how this is going to be used in more innovative ways. That's what we need, as opposed to just programmers and engineers. I thought that was a really, really cool insight. And I think if we do have that, if we have more of those types of people joining, that's when we're going to see the real utility of blockchains and cryptocurrency being realized.
Really good point. Really good point. Something to think about there. I'd like to get into a story we didn't have time for on the radio show. And folks, please don't call the number until we give it out. So we're going to give out the phone number at a certain point. If you call before we give the number out, we're not going to pick up. And your call will just go into some wasteland someplace. So we'll give it out in a couple of minutes. But a German court has charged a programmer investigating an IT problem with hacking and fined them 3,000 euro, which is about $3,200, for what it deemed was unauthorized access to external computer systems and spying on data. Now, according to the original report, the programmer, who apparently is unnamed in this entire story, which is interesting, operating as a freelance IT service provider, was initially tasked by a client to resolve excessive log generation issues with the merchandise management software they were using. The programmer examined the software and found that it established a MySQL connection with a remote server belonging to Modern Solution GmbH, the management software vendor. After connecting to the database, it was determined that it not only contained his customers' data, but also the data for nearly 700,000 of Modern Solutions' other customers, constituting a significant data privacy issue. Upon realizing that the database contained data for other companies, the programmer disconnected from the remote database and worked with a tech blogger to help notify the software vendor of the cybersecurity and privacy issue. All sounds pretty good so far. Modern Solution GmbH took the server offline to fix the problem, denying there was a security gap in their systems. The programmer and tech blogger quickly disclosed the issue the same day without waiting for a comment from the management software vendor. Soon after, the company reported the programmer to the police for unauthorized access to the exposed data and their database server. The programmer told tech blog WordFilters that the management software was found connecting to a MySQL server over the internet to determine what the database connection was for, the programmer extracted the plain text password for the MySQL database connection from one of the management software's executables. The prosecution argued that the defendant went as far as decompiling the software. However, the programmer confirmed that they simply listed the strings to the msconnect.exe executable to find the plain text password. However, the court decided that unauthorized access to data protected with a password violates Section 202C of the German Criminal Code, also known as the hacker paragraph. The hacker paragraph. The judge cited a 2007 legislative amendment on hacking, emphasizing that protection doesn't need to be robust to warrant offense. However, the judge demonstrated some leniency towards the consultant, considering his previous clean record, and imposed a lower fine than the prosecution demanded. The defendant's lawyer argued that his client acted in the general public's interest, responsibly informing the software vendor about the security lapse, and criticized the court's views on the matter as outdated. The programmer has decided to appeal the decision, and the case will be assigned to a higher regional court, where the decision could assume an important role as a legal precedent. Rob.
This is an amazing story, and of course, this cites Section 202C of the German Criminal Code. Now, there is a site that is run by the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, which is providing a translation of this bit of the German Criminal Code. So it's very short. So I'll read it out, and maybe our law talking guy friend here can add his thoughts. Section 202C, acts preparatory to data espionage and phishing. One, whosoever prepares the commission of an offense under Section 202A or Section 202B by producing, acquiring for himself or another, selling, supplying to another, disseminating, or making otherwise accessible, one, passwords or other security codes enabling access to data, or two, software for the purpose of the commission of such an offense, shall be liable to imprisonment not exceeding 1 year or a fine. There's no further information here, no info on whether there are any exceptions for people who are actually doing the right thing and, you know, responsibly disclosing things, nothing else. So this seems to be what is being thrown at that researcher.
Yeah. And you also have to remember too, that Germany is a civil law jurisdiction, as opposed to a common law jurisdiction. I think that's a really important distinction here. And the difference being, common law is something that really the British had invented. And when we had engaged in the American Revolution and fought the British and won, even though we were our own nation, we had actually adopted all of the British common law, essentially the history of English decisions in court. And common law really is about judge-made law, right? So when a judge decides a particular issue, that decision becomes part of the evolution of the law itself. And that interpretation of the law is itself an act of making new law. And so in the United States, we have the equivalent provisions would be the unauthorized access sections of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, the federal statute that was passed in 1984 after Ronald Reagan watched War Games and then exhorted Congress to pass a law because it seemed like hacking wasn't illegal at the federal level at that particular point. And since then, for literally the last 40 years, we have case law of judges interpreting the provisions of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act and what it means to exceed authorization. And in Germany, they just have the statutes. Judge-made law really isn't a thing over there. It's civil law, meaning the law of the statute and what the legislature has put into that law is what controls. And the judges don't really have a lot of discretion in how to interpret that. So even though it seems like there was very, very minimal security here and the intention behind extracting the password for the SQL database was to diagnose a problem, because we're talking about interpretation of law in a civil law country and statute controls, the judge's hands were probably tied in terms of what he could do.
Well, you know, I look at the story and I see a company that says they don't have a problem. And I see this programmer saying, yes, you do. And here's how. and being penalized for doing that. I mean, what other way could this have gone? Either you just accept these people saying they don't have a problem when they clearly do, or you challenge them and wind up in court.
Well, that's true, too. I mean, maybe another way of doing it would be to do that, to bring a case against them. But that would be just ridiculous and cumbersome to have to do that. I mean, I agree. There really isn't a good solution here, and you could argue back and forth. But ultimately, this IT consultant had an obligation. He had a job and a duty, and he was trying to fulfill that job and perform his obligations. And he did so in a pretty zealous manner. I would think that in the United States, this hopefully wouldn't have been prosecuted as a crime.
I would just add, in retrospect, I think that 40 years, specifically the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, we as defending organizations have ended up less security minded, and I think less well equipped for locking people up for pointing this stuff out. I think those laws had a lot more of a cost as we look back on the kind of education, the kind of openness to information sharing and reporting. And it's shaped us and made us ill-equipped for an environment where the actors who are now compromising systems don't care in the first place about any laws, and or they're empowered to break them by their state governments or if they're stateless, whatever organization they might affiliate themselves with. And so adopting precedent wholesale over time can actually shape what society becomes.
Go ahead, Alex.
I agree with that, Kyle. And I think there's also a massive cost in how slowly we have evolved our notion of what unauthorized access means under the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. And, you know, and it's literally cost us lives in this community. It was the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act it was under the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act that Aaron Swartz was charged. Mm-hmm. And it was that charge that caused him and the refusal of the Department of Justice to settle that charge and engage in a meaningful plea arrangement with him. And they wanted to pursue those charges against him. And he took his own life because of that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's incredibly sad that we lost such talented and shining lights in our community because of the idiotic interpretation of these types of laws to people trying to solve problems, right?
Yeah.
Think about, like, how awesome would it be if we had Aaron Swartz's voice right now and in shaping the use of large language models? I'd love to hear what he would have to say about that or the evolution of AI. It's just so incredibly sad that we're robbed of that.
Right. When we look at the landscape now and what's going on and the real need for expertise, that contrasted with looking back, how much like the cost has been in really talented individuals, it's really, really hard to grapple with. I get more upset the more I look back. And our takeaway when we lose somebody like this, it shouldn't be like, oh, we learned to follow rules better. You know, like, that isn't hacking, I think. We've talked about political acts. We've talked about, like, you know, I don't know. I think in memorializing people, we've talked about, like, so what is the lesson? What is the point of all of this? Where are we going to go if there is less human involvement and less connection between individuals? I really want to challenge our mindsets in thinking about all of these things, because there really has been sadly a cost, and we're left in a position where we're still evangelizing, trying to create understanding around the spirit of hacking, why it's beneficial, why we can actually have better systems when that act is not punished so, mm-hmm. so in such a costly way, so violently, I want to say.
No, it's absolutely accurate to say that, because it is violent. You know, when you put someone like Virgil in prison for the simple act of going to North Korea and talking about ways that a system can be subverted, that's not a democratic system at work. That is a system that is designed to crush the individual spirit. And that's what we've been talking about tonight. People that show weaknesses in systems, whether it's the MTA, whether it's this system in Germany, whatever hackers have done throughout the ages, it's mostly about pointing out that, yeah, you think you're secure, but you're not. We're not talking about people who use it for their own benefit and steal money and take advantage of people. That's a whole different kettle of fish. We're talking about people who simply state the inconvenient and bring on the wrath of the system and the powerful people that have the power to throw them in prison or to make their lives miserable, you know, to the extent that someone does take their life. That is what is outrageous. That is what we have always been fighting against, and hopefully many more people will also fight against that kind of injustice. All right.
Yeah.
I guess we should open up the phone lines.
It's offloading the costs to people that, you know, from a company, from government perspective, to people that are just pointing something out that otherwise would not be observed or known about.
Our phone number is 802-321-4225. That's 802-321-HACK. Call us and we will accept your phone calls and please be fairly brief and let us know what's on your mind and if there's anything you want to share. I hear the phone already ringing, so shall we pick that up, Kyle? Is it who we think it is? It is who we think it is. Okay, well then I will say a big hello to Rebel. Good evening.
Okay, let me see if the volume's good.
As we have caller ID. So you might want to block that if you call us, *67.
Yeah, maybe I'll start doing that from now on.
Yeah, maybe you should not advertise your presence so much.
Okay, let me see if the volume's okay for me.
Yeah, let's check our audio level. Everybody else, check their levels. Check our... Everyone good?
Hold on.
Yeah.
Microphone check. Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know what's a good thing? A dial tone is really good for checking levels. You want to get one of those?
Okay, my volume could be a tiny bit louder. It's good.
It could be, but we're lucky that it's not.
There's a certain threshold where it feeds back. You might want to turn your headphones down.
So much Rebel we can take. What about my headphones? How are my headphones?
It's all going to go haywire. I just know.
I'm already hearing too much. Hey, Rebel, what's on your mind?
Yeah, we're ready.
Okay, as you know, I'm back from California. I've been back for the last week, but you weren't taking phone calls.
Wow. I'm sorry to have ruined your week.
Well, I noticed that I don't know if I can. I guess I can mention airlines that I fly, huh? Because you know that I flew American Airlines to California, well, it was to Phoenix Express, but and then United Airlines back. But you know they don't even give you food on the plane on a New York to Arizona flight or they gave you food on the plane for the California to New York, but I mean, in American Airlines they don't even give you food on the plane anymore. I don't, like they give you snacks. From New York to Arizona.
Uh-huh. That's nothing new. They've been cutting down on that.
And New York to California to New York, they gave you meals, but, oh, you have to pay for it. But no, I'll use my credit card. No, you have to do it on our app.
Are you kidding? Really? You can't use a credit card anymore?
Yeah, you have to go on their app or their portal or whatever. What if you don't have a smartphone?
What if you don't have a smartphone? Oh, my God. I said the same thing as Rebel.
Or what if you didn't pay for Wi-Fi? Oh, maybe they have free Wi-Fi.
Well,
I don't know.
It doesn't really matter, but...
Point taken.
Yeah. Okay. So what did you do?
I complained. I said, you know, I don't have, you know... Well, I didn't say I didn't have a smartphone, but I just said, well, I'm willing to pay for this with a credit card. But they said, oh, well, I'm sorry. You have to use their app or download or whatever.
It's airline food. It's really not worth getting upset about. I get something, you know, from the neighborhood or from the airport and, you know, just bring that on the plane instead.
Remember when I used to like take cars from one state to another and do that back in 2005, 2006, 2007? I mean, before, you know, get a nice meal on a plane, New York to Florida, California to New York, a nice meal, and the meals are pretty good. You didn't have to pay for the check badge ever since, you know, now you have to.
Well, you know, take a train next time. You get good meals on the train.
Yeah, that's true. But you have to pay for those. You know.
Well, you have to pay for everything, Rebel. That's the way it works.
Well, back then, 2007 and 2006, you didn't have to pay for meals on the plane.
You paid in a different way.
Well, they were free and they were good, and you didn't have to pay to check your bags.
Yeah, well, you know, things do change. That's certainly true. But, you know, airlines were subsidized so much that it got ridiculously, much cheaper than it should have been for what you were using.
The pandemic. I mean, it's the pandemic, you know, like I remember hearing the news reports from, I think it was Chuck Schumer said, well, the airlines are making so much money now, they should stop charging for, checking luggage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. They should. They're ripping people off. There's no question about it. But I just, you know, I find different ways of traveling so much more pleasant and less stressful.
Let's see, what else? Have you ever heard of a data speed terminal, like it's what the Bell system used in, like, you know, in the 80s? Or?
I'm not sure. Tell us about it.
It's a data speed terminal. If you look it up on Google, it's like a Bell system-type terminal. Like, AT&T was not allowed to make computers and sell them on the open market. They basically made their own computers and used it within their own company.
I think Gila knows something about this. Go ahead, Gila.
Oh, no, I don't. But we did have a listener comment that Rebel can do an old-time thing like hitchhike for free.
You would suggest that to the people of the United States that
you
have
walk on
Rebel sticking his thumb out in their neighborhood and potentially getting into their vehicles?
I am merely passing along a suggestion from another member of our community.
Okay, well, just remember, suggestions carry consequences, and you know, somebody is going to stop and pick Rebel up. And then this conversation, you know, could go on for quite some time where he tells us all about the Bell computer. Or was it Rebel?
Terminal.
The Data Speed 40, I think it was called.
Uh-huh. I don't know about it myself, but we can certainly look it up.
Yeah, if you Google it, you're all going to have access to Google over there, I'm sure. Data Speed 40 is, you can see a picture of it, not a very good one, but you can see a picture of it, and it's when you called repair service, that's what they would look up your phone number, and I think the business office used it to look up when you gave them your phone number to look up your bill or something.
Okay.
I think, I mean.
Well, they don't need them anymore, you know, they're no more operators or, you know.
Sounds like the Craft Access Terminal, but it's probably similar.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that's
maybe
true.
Older.
But it's just a terminal.
What else you got? What else you got, Rebel?
What else? When I get a call from like telemarketers or something,
here we go.
I get one phone. I use my regular phone number. They call my regular phone number. When I call it back, it says
it's a different number. Yeah, it's not the same number because they're faking.
It says one thing like this phone number cannot be dialed. But when I call from another number, I get a different thing. Like I get the actual company. Like they're blocking one number, but like, something.
You
like
call that. The exact same number from a different phone and it goes through, but on another phone it doesn't.
Right. But not the goes through type where like a caller ID blocking kind of goes through. It's the type where it's the message coming from them or their company saying, you know, this voicemail is not working or something like that.
Well, my theory is that they have something programmed that looks for a particular number or lack of a number and sends a message back to that. And if you call from something other than that, it'll let you get through. What you could do, test this. Dial *67 on each one. That'll block caller ID. And the number should show up the same way from each phone. You should get the same exact result if you call that way.
Are you saying it times out like the last number it called for like 10 minutes or something? Is that what you're suggesting? Like whatever system they're using blocks the previous number it just called?
No, well, like if you get a call from a telemarketer, I'm on your cell phone.
Right. And
call it from yourself, it'll work. It'll go to whatever. But if you dial from a different, like if you have a Google Voice number and you call it from that, it'll give you a message saying, you know, we can't complete this call to voicemail, or the voicemail is full, or something like that. Or,
well, you can program responses based on where a phone call is coming from. So they're probably doing something like that. So, you know. That's what's going on. The question is, yeah, why? No, what are their motives?
Also right. They also, you know, call and then not say anything, which I think is like, you know.
Whoever is clicking, please mute your microphone. You're clicking too loud. Thank you. Go ahead, Rebel.
You don't hear them or whatever. You know, but I don't know if they're recording your voice for artificial intelligence, or if when you call back the number, it's either busy or you get a strange tone, and or you get a recording saying your call cannot be completed or whatever.
And all that can be like changing in real time, like really quickly. Like it can be dynamic. So for you to call back from like 10 different numbers really quickly and see how it reacts or responds or directs each of those calls might be an interesting test, but it'd be hard to like set that up and react to having been called from that with that kind of setup immediately.
Hey, but, Rebel, have you ever used Spoof Card?
Spoof Card, is it an app?
It's well, go to the website. What is it, spoofcard.com or something? You basically can get you can get cards from them where you can change your number to whatever you want to call from. And you can do all kinds of experiments.
It's like text now.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, it's like text now.
It might be like the parent of it, or...
That I don't know. Yeah, it is spoofcard.com. Call and text my virtual phone number, and you can change the number and do all kinds of experiments. That way, you know, you can see what happens if you call from, say, California, or you call from the White House.
You're under no obligation to play nice with these people.
That's true.
I think, something that people know universally about this. And
well,
I think that
we're running out of phone numbers, because there are all these phone numbers. 832-426. Well, I mean, like, I think we should go back to the days with, you know, numbers going to a central office. And,
I agree with that. I totally agree with that. And this whole, glut of overflow area codes is nonsense. What they should have done, I'm going to go into this tirade again, was make area codes 4 digits. You know, you would have had 2121, 2122, 2123. And nobody would have had to have gotten these ridiculous area codes that don't have any geographical, correlation.
The overlays?
Yeah, we just simply added a digit to the phone number. I would have opened up so many more phone numbers without, you know, this fake crisis of running out of numbers because people waste them.
Yeah.
That's why they're like these Indian, scammers. They get 800 numbers and regular phone numbers. I mean... They're not even in our country, and they're using our phone numbers and full phone numbers.
How dare they? Well, tell Trump about this. You know that they're not even getting to the wall. They're using our actual numbers, our phone number. He could go off on this. He could have a long tirade. You know, he can imitate a touch tone pad at some point. Beep, bop, boop. You know, he'll do that. Rebel, this is what I think you should focus your attention on right now.
They have to use our numbers the right way.
Yeah, call Trump. He'll take your call for sure.
Say they a lot.
Rebel.
We're actually taking another call right now.
We have to go. All right, so we're going to be disconnecting.
Your dime.
Thank you, ma'am.
And we wish you well. And have a good rest of your night.
Okay.
Please wait.
You know, when he laughs like that, it's something that stays with me for a while. when you laugh like that too, Rob, same thing. And yeah, you see, that's what happens when you laugh like that. All right. 802-321-4225 is our phone number. 802-321 hack.
Slow down. Yeah. Slow down. Easy. Easy. Now.
Yeah. Whew. It takes a lot out of me talking to him.
He's not wrong.
About what?
Just all the crazy stuff people waste this on. And regular people that use these systems don't think to fight back and to set up experiments like we're talking about, and even take an interest in what the different things are doing. And Yeah, we end up with crazy systems and we wonder why it's here. I was just reading there's a new overlay in Seattle. I think 564 is being added.
Yeah. You know, there are area codes in New York City that I don't even know. I think 929 is one of them. That's one of the ones I do know. But there's others. Do you know them?
We have a 929 number.
You have a 929 number?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, good for you. I thought 929 was only Manhattan, but see, that shows how much I know.
No. I think, what is it, 322?
322? What a stupid area code. I'm sorry, but that's, I mean, 347, I know that's Brooklyn and Queens, I think. But I remember the 718 split. I remember when everything in New York City was 212, including Brooklyn, Queens, Staten Island, and the Bronx. But then they split to 718. You know, I have my grandparents' old rotary phone in the other room that has their old 212 number. They lived in Sunnyside, Queens. Yeah, that's how far back it dates. And the phone still works better than any other phone, I'll have you know. So that's something about Bell technology.
Like, we had this discussion like a year ago on overtime, and it's 332, I think, is the newest New York area code. And we found like a Taco Bell that has that phone number, like has a 332 number.
What did they do to piss off the phone company to get something in that area code? No one's going to think they're local. I don't know who calls Taco Bell, but still.
No one's going to know where anybody is. I mean, we have a 929 number. And I remember a while ago now, we were getting spoofed. Our phone number was getting spoofed and people were busy. So we would have dozens of messages, people saying, why did you call me? Why did you call me? To the point where we re-recorded the outgoing voicemail to say, if you know us, great. If you don't know us and you're returning a phone call from this number, it wasn't us and we're really, really sorry.
You don't have to be sorry. You didn't do anything.
Yeah, people, stop being sorry.
Yeah.
Don't be sorry. It's not your fault.
Say this phone call cost $10 a minute. And that'll get them to hang up really quickly.
Also, a couple of notes from the chat. We were asked if this conversation with Rebel was a rerun, which did remind me also of one of my favorite episodes of Saturday Night Live, but that's a different discussion.
You think he's doing that? He's playing himself back and I'm falling for it each time? That could be happening because I get deja vu every time I talk to him.
We had a listener who asked if we can change the YouTube picture and put something more cheerful.
What's not cheerful about will be removed? That's pretty cheerful. Just see the old one. It showed you what was there before they removed it. You know, that was really depressing.
Hey, listeners, if you had other suggestions, someone did suggest the bell van would be a good look. Okay. As a general talking point, did anyone see the Gizmodo article about the 18-year-old kid who decided to use the airport's Wi-Fi to send a text on Snapchat that said, on my way to blow up the plane?
Not the brightest bulb in the bunch, huh?
Guess I missed that one. And from our friend Lou Reishu, who made that awesome dance track with our voices. The story on the wide open SQL database reminds me of how early cell phones communicated over unencrypted radio. This shit is totally out there and accessible. It sucks. And instead of making the system more secure, the FCC decided to make listening in on those particular frequencies illegal. It's essentially the same thing with that inventory software company. Their system is insecure. They don't want to fix it. And anyone who accesses said bad system should be penalized.
Right.
And someone just chimed in now and said Rebel was concerned about his volume levels. If he was planning on recording it for future use, that would make a lot of sense.
Uh-huh. Okay, we're starting to zero in on
piecing it together
on his motives here and his operation. Okay, we have a phone call, right, Carl?
There is someone waiting.
Okay, and good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
I guess that's me.
Yes, it is. Is you. It is definitely
all
you.
Right. Yes. Okay. I was going to warn you otherwise because I called the 833 number and I was listening carefully. I guess it just plays the show until I'm on. My question is very simple. What is the title of the book that Alex mentioned? Proof of? I didn't get the last.
Before we tell you, you must tell us where you're calling from.
Oh, Manhattan.
Manhattan. Okay. And Alex, do you have that title handy?
I do indeed. It's called Proof of Stake by Vitalik Buterin, B-U-T-E-R-I-N.
sorry, again, proof of stake by?
By Vitalik, V-I-T-A-L-I-K, Buterin, B-U-T-E-R-I-N.
Okay, great, I'll find it.
Yeah,
now, I could also launch into another conversation, but I don't want to do what his name did, you know, wasting precious airtime on Minugia. But I do congratulate you, Emmanuel, on your sense of humor. I really liked that joke that went almost undetected about the dial tone, that when you were basically threatening to disconnect him.
Yeah, you got that.
Yes, I did. I did, and I thought it was brilliant. On the other hand, that picture, I don't, you know, your sense of humor is sometimes a little over everybody's head. That picture is not funny. It doesn't communicate anything.
I never said it was funny. I never said it was a funny picture. Did I say that?
Yeah, I think you did, but
I just said it wasn't a depressing picture. It's not a depressing picture.
Well, it's a nothing picture, really.
Yeah, that's what I shoot for. Nothing. Yeah. Well, maybe we can do
better. Okay. All right. Well, then you got your result. But we could also have a listeners' contest. Everybody could send in their thing, and then, you know, a committee could decide what.
So we have committees now. Did you just turn it upside down, Kyle? What did you do?
What are you talking about?
Oh my God! Wait, first of all, when does that show up? Does it show up immediately, or?
Oh yeah.
Because I'm looking at a script. Oh, it just did it for me. Wow. Well, I had nothing to do with that at all. All right.
Okay.
I do not endorse Kyle's actions here.
I have more
power.
Well,
people, this is what you get.
I yield to my colleagues who might have more interesting questions to bring up. And thank you again.
All right. Thank you for your call.
Thanks
take care.
For listening.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Notes taken.
So this is what we do to people when they make helpful suggestions on improving things. We just throw it in their face and turn
it
upside down.
When I touch things, it just
It looks, if you look at it carefully, it looks like it's in Russian. Doesn't
sure.
it? A little bit.
Yeah, that R. Yeah.
Not to somebody who knows Russian, obviously, but
no, to the
to somebody who doesn't know Russian and is sort of looking at it out of the side of their eyes. We're talking about the picture on for people listening later who aren't looking at the YouTube channel right now. This will be lost on you. But for people who play back YouTube, maybe Gila, you know that. I'm sorry. Did I make you sneeze? I'm sorry. For people who are watching this and watching the chat go by. Are you okay there? For some reason, we're both breaking up. And there goes Alex. Okay. Will they see the picture flip at the same? It's really not that funny.
What is going on here?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. It's just.
You just have to turn your screen.
No, I know, but what I'm asking. I think it's the noises you're making that are setting me off.
I'm so sorry.
Well, I can turn my mic. Okay, I can.
What were we talking about?
Okay. If anybody else knows the answer to this question, let's say someone's playing back the show on YouTube and they see the chat going by, right? Because that's how we have it set up. They see the chat in live time, right? Okay, that's the first part. Will they see the picture flip also? They will. Okay. All right. That's all I need to know, Gila. Thank you. Go about whatever you need to do there.
She's moderating. Just
yeah.
Give her some room here.
Okay.
We do have a call, yes.
And all the commotion, I didn't even hear it.
No,
come in.
I picked it up. Okay. It was ringing when you were addressing this, but we're ready now.
Okay. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Well, how you doing there, Emmanuel? I reckon your moderator, she sounds like she's been smoking marijuana or something, giggling so much.
Well, some people have that effect, but that's not what's happening here.
Oh, okay. Well, it just sounded like she sure was tickled.
Uh-huh.
I just wanted to talk about something I saw today. It was pretty funny. You know, HP, they're always trying to lock their printers down with all this jib-jab about you got to buy our ink and buy it a whole bunch of times and stuff. And the CEO, he done came out today, boys. And he said that blocking third-party ink for printers fights viruses. And everybody knows that's a big load of junk. It's just stupid. They're greed-driven corporations and everything. But you know what else came out today, buddy?
What's that?
Today, Hewlett-Packard disclosed to the SEC that they were compromised by APT-29, a.k.a. Cozy Bear, a.k.a. Midnight Blizzard.
Oh, wow.
And I thought that was pretty funny.
That is pretty funny. That is pretty funny.
Ironic.
Yeah. I like to call that karma.
I think that's exactly what
it is. Indeed it is, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's about it, though. I'll let y'all get back to talking. Just wanted to, drop a little breaking news. That's courtesy of VX Underground.
Can we ask what part of the world you're calling from?
Oh, Eastern Kentucky.
Eastern Kentucky.
Best part of Kentucky. Mountains, buddy.
All righty.
Thanks for doing what you're doing. Thanks for listening to us. And absolutely, that I saw some of those. Go ahead.
Oh, I'll just say no. Yeah, love you guys. And just going to let you go.
All right.
Great.
Thanks for calling.
I caught those stories.
All right. Take care.
He was talking about, and it was absurd. It's exactly right. Apparently, cartridges that can introduce malware or some sort of software. And I mean, come on. It's a consumable that supplies the ink for this thing. It's not supposed to be a vector, and they just don't want third party competition.
It's crazy. They don't make enough money selling what they sell. They have to resort to these tactics. It's too much.
Sad,
another call, I take it?
People are wise to it, though. Go ahead. Yeah, we have a call.
And good evening. You're on. It's a busy signal, Kyle. What are you trying to make me look like a fool?
Too quick or slow.
No, I don't think it was you. I'm not sure how a busy signal even calls us.
We could deal with that kind of feedback.
All right. 802-321-4225 on for another 10 minutes or so. And anything from Skype land?
It's kind of nice to hear a busy signal because you just don't really get those anymore.
That's true. I wish you could get it when you call us, because we can only take one phone call at a time. But we're using Google Voice or whatever, and they don't believe in busy signals, so they're going to send people who call while we're talking to somebody else off into the ether, and there's nothing we can do about it. Okay, that was a phone call. Let's try this again. Good evening. You're on Off Look Overtime. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. This is Eddie. I called a while ago when you were doing talking about the ad block. I'm the teacher that was calling you about how the DOE is dealing with all this stuff. I just wanted a little update. They actually block now Firefox as well as DuckDuckGo on like all the DOE devices, whether it's a computer, laptop or...
Hold on. First of all, you're moving your mouthpiece a bit, so it's hard to hear you. But who's blocking what now?
DOE's blocking Firefox along with DuckDuckGo as the browser.
Well, wait. DuckDuckGo is a site. Firefox is a browser. So how are they?
Yeah, there's also a DuckDuckGo browser.
They're blocking it off of the on all the OE devices. I use my own computer in the school, so I can still get Firefox and use it, but I can't use DuckDuckGo to search.
So
which is kind of
what's behind all this?
I'm not sure. Right now they're only allowing Google, Edge, and I guess when they're using Apple stuff, Navigate. I forget what the Apple one is called. It's just ridiculous because what I don't understand is how I can on my personal device I can still get Firefox even though I can't use DuckDuckGo to search now, which is weird because on all of the computers that are controlled by the DOE, they can't even use Firefox. So it's just.
And this is New York City, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Go ahead, Alex.
Maybe it doesn't have to do with the type of browser or the technology, but it has to perhaps do with the executable files. And they may have some kind of policy that essentially locks down running any kind of executable file other than those that are whitelisted. So they might just have Chrome and whatever the hell it is that they have whitelisted without really giving any thought to alternative browsers and things like that. That's my guess about why the system works the way it does.
What is it they do allow?
They allow using Google or Chrome. You can use the Edge browser with Bing, I guess. And the I don't use Apple stuff, so I forget what the Apple one's called, the Navigator, whatever it is.
Safari.
So those are basically the only three. Safari. So it was at the point where you could still use Firefox on all the DOE devices, but then now they even block that. You know, you can even download the installation for it. That gets blocked as soon as you start installing it. It's just strange how they're doing it.
So is this something that is throughout the entire system in New York City?
Yeah, basically it's the whole DOE doing it. It's all the schools.
And users include students, teachers, administrators?
Students, teachers, because I was helping teachers get around the ad blockers, especially with Firefox. So, and I showed them, you know, I downloaded the ad blockers for them, set them up. They were happy because they could actually teach and use whatever videos in YouTube without getting any ads. Now, there was a situation where I was in a classroom with one of the teachers, and there was this reading assignment that they were doing, and they were using a video from YouTube, and it was a story. Right in the middle of the story, there was some ads for something unrelated to anything. You can hear even the kids groaning. Like,
it's terrible. No. It's awful. It's absolutely awful. It's obscene. You know, well, since all the students are affected, I think that's where the answer will be, because they'll be the ones to figure out how to get around this.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I can do is, like, you know, bring your own computer and you can set up Firefox that way. Because I still have my ad blockers. I still use it, even though I can't. I'm forced to use Google to do it. You can also, I think, with Edge, you can add blockers, but it seems to be a little bit clunkier than Firefox. I like the way Firefox works better. It seems smoother.
Yeah, but, you know, and this is something, let Firefox know about this as well, you know, because they deserve to know that the entire Board of Education in New York City is blocking them.
Yeah, there's no reason for it, but they just don't want it.
Well, the reason is that they want ads to somehow pollute the minds of kids and things like that. Go ahead, Rob. You have something?
Yeah, I'm wondering about the exact models and makes of these devices, and maybe if there are ways to load alternative operating systems onto them, which the user could then run whatever they like on.
Yeah, I don't know if they would allow that either, but most of them are Chromebooks. The kids are using mostly Chromebooks. The teachers are using the Lenovo ThinkPads, 11, something. I forget what which model specifically, but they're just like the convertible ThinkPad.
It seems so amazing that all these machines were made available at little to no cost. There's always a price. You might not see it today, you might not see it tomorrow, but it'll come due at some point, and I think that's what we're seeing here.
Yeah. It just makes things more awkward for the teacher, since they have to now just gotta wait. It's wasting time, because the ad plays, but then they give you the time to skip it, but it's after a few seconds of playing, so they can actually push whatever they're trying to sell onto the kids.
You know, I don't know if we suggested this before, but this would be a really good article in 2600, just outlining what you've noticed, what you've tried. That'll certainly get a lot of attention.
Oh, wow. I didn't think about that. Yeah.
Give all the details, and you'll have many thousands of people analyzing it, and it'll turn some heads.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Good luck.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. I think that's going to do it for us.
It's a great conversation, though.
Yeah.
It's really amazing. It's, you would think there would be tiers of service for educators specifically from a lot of these platforms that these hardware devices and classrooms are so vitally connected to and dependent on for lessons and for, you know, searching and all of that. That is really unfortunate, because you're creating this moment of disruption and making class time something other than what it should be.
You want to take this one last call?
Seems like it'd be easy to get through to people to create something specifically for educators. It's not that fair for everybody else who's using these services, though. But they don't, the fact they don't even care to offer something like that is pretty telling.
Okay, we're going to take this one more call, but Rob, sure, you go sure. first.
Yeah, just thinking about how so many bad policy decisions have been made with the think of the children justification. And here we are seeing the rules forced on to forcing a situation which is demonstrably worse for children by any measure.
Absolutely. Okay, you are the last phone call. Go ahead.
I forgot to mention on high definition voice on Android phones. I forgot when I was trying to get high definition voice, you know, like I think I had a phone that has HD voice. I was trying to get it, and I'm asking T-Mobile. They don't know. I'm asking Samsung. They said T-Mobile does it, and how does that even work?
Will be the question that we tackle next time on Off the Hook. Thank you very much, everybody, for calling and for participating. Write to us, oth@2600.com. This sad note, I wanted to mark the passing of our good friend Winnie in Germany, who was key in designing Hope Pages for Hope X in 2014, the 11th Hope in 2016, the Circle of Hope 2018, and we will miss him quite a bit. Write to us, oth@2600.com. We will not be on next week. We'll be on in 2 weeks, and we hopefully will see you then. Good night.